Hello everyone, welcome to my channel Journey and Beyond Untold Stories. Today on the podcast, I'm joined by Dr. Michelle Lipton, Head of Neurogenetics and Dementia at QI Marburghofer. With a career spanning over two decades, Michelle has worked at the cutting edge of neuroscience from her PhD and postdoctoral years at King's College London to leading groundbreaking research here in Australia. Her work focuses on unraveling the complex genetics and cognitive factors behind dementia with the goal of improving early detection and prevention. Hi, Michelle. Welcome to my channel, Journey and Beyond Untold Stories. How are you? How are things? How's life?
Good, thank you. Thanks very much for having me.
I think I would like to, first of all, you are such a great leader and inspiring scientist. You inspire so many of us out there. I wonder what made you become a scientist?
I started working on genetics and I'm actually an identical twin. So I think that's what made me, like, I was always really interested in genetics and I just found that really fascinating. So I think that's what made me interested in working in that area.
Wow, amazing. So you've got a personal story linked to this.
Yes, yeah.
Is your sister also a scientist?
Yeah, she's an engineer. Oh. So I think she's more mathsy than me. And I always really like more biology things and more people.
Yeah. So why Alzheimer's?
I kind of found myself working in that research area when I finished my degree. So I worked as a research assistant actually in Huntington's disease. And then, I always just found it really interesting. And then also my grandfather was diagnosed with dementia as well. And I guess like most people, you know, you have an experience of dementia in your family or people you know. And so I think, yeah, it's a really important research area. Yeah, so I was really kind of happy to work in that area.
Nice. So Michelle, I've got a lot of fun questions laid out for you, and not fun for people like us, like me, who don't really get to focus on Alzheimer's every day in their life. So I wonder if you can enlighten us, like, you know, if our brain could really talk, what would it be trying to warn us about years before Alzheimer's shows up?
Yeah, so we know that, so actually the kind of pathology or like the damage in your brain starts up to kind of 20 or 15 years before you get any symptoms of dementia. So it's kind of a silent thing that's happening that you might not know about. So I think that's, a kind of a really important research area that we work on is trying to identify people who are in this, what we call a prodromal disease phase. So before you have any symptoms, but where hopefully in the future you might be able to have an intervention or a drug that could help prevent the kind of ongoing damage to the brain.
Right. So if in the simple language, so say if a person like me, who's a scientist, fortunately, but say someone who's not a scientist and someone who's not aware of Alzheimer's or Parkinson's and they are at a high threat of getting one, say 15 years later, what they should be doing today to just to keep a track of their own brain health?
Yeah, so we know there's quite a few risk factors for dementia and Alzheimer's disease that we know of. So these actually kind of, sadly, they're really just things that you should do anyway to keep yourself healthy. So we know that risk factors from middle age include things like not smoking, keeping your weight, you know, not being obese, reducing your risk of other diseases such as diabetes and hypertension. So really kind of keeping generally healthy is really important. And also keeping your mind active. So we know that actually education is one of the protective factors for dementia. So obviously you might not be able to change that from when you're young, but you can keep your mind active as you get older. And also things like social interactions are really important. And also reducing your risk of depression. So that also, you know, goes to kind of social interactions and keeping your mind active.
So can you give us a couple of tips how to keep our brain active?
Yeah, in previous years, there was a lot of kind of talk about brain training and things. And actually the most you don't need to do anything in particular. It's really more about just doing what you enjoy. So research has shown that even actually social interactions are really important. So just talking to someone, like talking to your friends and getting out of the house and doing things and not being lonely is actually one of the most important things to keep your mind active.
Yeah.
And then just get anything like craft or reading or just anything that's not kind of passive, like, you know, not just watching TV or staring at screen, but actually using your mind properly, doing things.
Yeah, right. I think playing games probably can be one of the things.
Yes, definitely.
Games which involves brain.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Do you think we are all a little afraid of losing our memories? And what's the first thing that usually fades? And can we get it back?
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's the most scary thing about dementia is that, yeah, you would just start to forget people and lose your memory. But actually, with Alzheimer's disease in particular, the first thing to go is more kind of your executive function. So people always ask, how do you know you're getting Alzheimer's or dementia? They worry about kind of forgetting people's names and that kind of thing. But actually, you know, we all do that. You know, if you're very busy and stressed, or as you get older, you do get a bit more forgetful. With dementia, the first sign is really kind of if it affects your day-to-day functioning. So one example would be if you got lost going somewhere that you would have been to many, many times before. So if you normally know your way somewhere, you keep getting lost, that would be an early sign. Or kind of not being able to do something. So one example from my family was my granddad cooked a lettuce instead of a cabbage. And he just kind of just didn't think, like when he was eating it, it's like, oh, this cabbage is horrible. But he just didn't realize that he actually cooked a lettuce instead. So it's kind of, yeah, it's very sad. So it's kind of, yeah, things that affect your day-to-day life.
If dementia or say Alzheimer's is in someone's genes, is it really a done deal or can we outsmart our DNA?
Yeah, so it's definitely, so we know that Alzheimer's is partially in your genes. Mm-hmm. So if you have family members with Alzheimer's, you do have an increased risk. But there is also, you know, the combination of genes and environment. So the biggest risk factor for Alzheimer's is a gene called the APOE gene. But even people who have two copies of that gene don't necessarily go on to get Alzheimer's disease. So it's not a predetermined thing. So if your genes do affect your risk, but if you, it's also kind of partly also in a way down to luck as well, but you can kind of make yourself more lucky by, you know, reducing your risk factors as well.
Right. Nice. Can we train our brain to protect from dementia, or is that just another health myth? Like, you know, you said that we can take certain measures, but is it really effective in the long term? It's just a health myth. Like, you know, you can exercise more, keep your brain more active, but does it really work?
Yes, yes. So there's been, so I would say when you're talking about brain training, you know, people sell kind of brain training things online and that kind of thing. And I would say that's not, like, probably avoid those or don't kind of invest too much in those, because that's just kind of one small thing, repetitive thing that you're doing over and over. So that's probably not really, in the long term, it doesn't really work. You just get better at doing that particular thing. But definitely kind of more general lifestyle changes can make a difference. So at the moment, there's been some larger kind of large scale intervention trials where they look at kind of things like diet, exercise, and kind of healthy living altogether. And then, and they've really shown in a proper randomized controlled trial that you can reduce your cognitive decline as you get older. And now there's a lot of work going into showing that potentially, you know, it does actually reduce your risk of dementia. But also, even if it doesn't stop you getting dementia, it would potentially delay the onset. And obviously that's still important because it gives people, you know, a few more years of healthy life as they get older.
Right, right. So you are using AI in dementia research. Does that mean one day an app could spot early signs of Alzheimer's before we could?
Yes, yes. Yeah, so at the moment, we're working on looking for like screening approaches for early signs of dementia. And there's a lot of work going into kind of apps and things on your phone. So one area is looking at speech. So there's work where you can use AI to analyze speech patterns in people. And there's some evidence that those patterns could be used to identify people who potentially are starting to have Alzheimer's disease. And then there's also things like activity trackers. And the idea is probably in the future that you might be able to, because AI can, you know, analyze really massive amounts of data at the same time. So you can look at many different variables in combination and see which things in combination are the most predictive. So that's definitely a kind of a growth area that a lot of people are working on.
And what's one thing you think that AI sees in these, you know, brain tracking activities that human miss? So you said that the speech movement, do you think that human by themselves can actually track those events, or you need the help of AI and software to do that?
Yeah, I think so. The software is able to just look at all the different traits at the same time. So it's kind of just a way of like analyzing data, really. So it's something, it might pick up things that, you know, you might not hear, or a pattern of many different things in combination.
Yeah, right. So Michelle, can you please help us dive into your own story of a patient or say family member that changed how you see your own research?
In my work, because we work a lot on data analysis, and I run a cohort study where we do have research participants that come in to see us, but I kind of don't really see them on a day-to-day basis. So a lot of the time we get caught up in analysing data and kind of trying to find the answer to things, and then also applying for funding, which is always, you know, it feels like that sometimes is the goal. But then when you meet research participants or people who have dementia or people who care for people with dementia, it really helps to make you realize what you're doing is really important. And I think all researchers need every so often to talk to the people who have the disorder that you're working on, or their family members, just to kind of give you that kind of drive to keep going. I guess one person I always remember, I had a caregiver of someone with dementia kind of spoke to me and said, oh, how do you ever go on holiday? And I said, oh, what do you mean? And she was saying, you know, how do you ever have a break? Because what you're doing is so important. You should just work all the time. I was shocked. I said, oh, like, it kind of made you realize that people think, you know, yeah, it's really important. And you've got, you know, you've got to have that drive to think people are just really desperate and need and see what you're doing is very important.
Okay, Michelle, so you are a renowned scientist, and I wondered in your gut, do you think we will ever cure Alzheimer's?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. But I think we are on the pathway to doing that now. So there's been some really great new results in the field recently. Recently, some new drugs have been approved for Alzheimer's disease, and they're the first disease-modifying drugs for dementia, or for Alzheimer's in particular, and also the first new drugs that have been approved for 20 years. And there is some controversy with them, and it's not a cure yet, and not everyone will be suitable to take them, but it really kind of is showing that there is potential for disease modifying drugs, and it's kind of given researchers a lot of hope that we will eventually be able to cure Alzheimer's. So I think that the research area is really growing, and I think there's definitely much more hope than there was even 5 years ago.
Nice. If someone's listening right now with a family member going through dementia or Alzheimer's, what would you say to them?
Yeah, I think it's a very hard question. I think I work with you know, some really great people who work with caregivers and things, and so kind of just taking their advice on what they would say, I guess, is that I think people kind of say to just try and live in the moment when you have care for someone or know someone with dementia. People, you know, have a lot of confusion and find it hard to they get, you know, get upset if someone says, oh, that's not correct, or, you know, don't you remember? So I think a really important thing is to live in the moment and listen to someone and kind of let them tell you the same story again, over and over again, and just, you know, say go for a walk and talk about the, you know, the sunshine and that kind of thing, rather than trying to make someone try and remember. So I found that to be really good advice for people, just to try and live on day to day and just trying to enjoy that moment.
Yeah, right. So if I gave you a magic grant of unlimited funding, what's the one big idea you would test tomorrow?
So because I work in genetics and genetic epidemiology, we just love collecting data from many, many people, like millions of people. And that's how we just have the increased power to be able to find out about new genes that affect our risk and also understanding risk factors. So if I had, which I hope one day I'll get a massive grant, we would do just research many, many more people. So just take DNA from millions of people. And also a really important research area in genetics especially is looking at many different populations. So at the moment we only know, there's been much more research on, you know, white European populations. And it's only, and now there's a real push to try and look into genetics of all populations. So that's something that people are working on, but you know, it's difficult to get the funding. So that's, yeah, if I had massive amount of funding, that's where I would spend the money.
You sound so nerdy and so passionate about
That's a compliment, thank you.
You sound so passionate about genetics.
I know, I love it, I love it.
That's the world. All right, I've got some quick fire questions for you. What's one brain myth you want to set on fire?
I think, so one thing that upsets me a lot is sometimes people with dementia, they sometimes spend a lot of money on kind of interventions that, say for example, supplements and lifestyle changes and companies can charge a really lot of money for these things. And so that's kind of a bugbear of mine, that just make sure people don't, because people are very vulnerable and they want, you know, will do anything and if they think it'll help. But so I think that's one thing, to be very careful of those things. Don't, you know, spend, you know, eating healthily, like having a healthy diet is just as good as having like very expensive supplements. So that's kind of a bugbear of mine that, you know, makes me feel upset when I hear about people spending their final money on those kind of things.
Do you think one should take any sort of supplements to prevent neurological disorder, neurological disease?
I think really supplements should only, if you have a deficiency in something, then, and you're advised by a doctor, then definitely you should. So things like, if you're advised to have iron supplements or that kind of thing. And I think there's no harm in, you know, like multivitamins and things, but some supplements can actually be, you know, can be more, do more harm than good. So I think you have to just be really careful. So yeah, so I think get advice from the doctor and don't just spend a lot of money on very expensive supplements.
Yeah, nice. Is there anything you have completely changed your mind about since starting in neuroscience?
Oh yeah, I think the main thing would be that, like, understand, like, kind of think about mental health as a whole. And I think I used to think of mental health as, you know, separate from physical health. And I think working in this research area, and also colleagues who work on kind of psychiatric traits like depression and anxiety and things, is really kind of now the understanding that your brain health and mental health and body health are really massively intertwined with each other. And a lot of work is, you know, things like chronic inflammation. So how, like, say for example, diabetes affects your brain as well. So I would say that's the kind of area that I've really kind of learned more about and feel like I've changed my mind about that kind of the holistic approach where you've got to look after your body as well, and that'll also take care of your brain.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think mental health was such a big stigma, and a few years back it was such a big stigma. No one wanted to talk about mental health because people thought as soon as you speak about mental health, it's you have to seek a psychiatrist. And you have some psychological disorder, but it's not about, you know, psychological disorder or seeking a psychiatrist help all the time. It's also about well-being and just feeling safe in an environment or feeling happy with your own brain and body. And some people used to go to gym and just not talk about, you know, what they are going through in their lives. And now people are so much more open and so much awareness around mental health and well-being overall. So yeah, I'm glad that you pointed in that
direction.
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah. If your brain had a theme song, what would it be?
Oh, yeah. This
is like genetics.
Yeah. I know, this is really hard for me because I think, so this is going to sound so embarrassing to say, but I think like a lot of people, I'm kind of very neurotic and I always have not a voice in my head, but, you know, like I'm in a monologue, I mean. And then, so I'm always kind of doubting myself. And then I always think, no, stop. And then I try and like give myself self-motivation.
Yeah,
so I would say something very embarrassing, like a Katy Perry, like Roar or something like that, where I'm just like, come on, you can do it. And then, like, so I would say that's my, if I had to give myself a theme song, I would try and something like that. To say, okay, keep going. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Michelle, for jumping on the podcast, and we really appreciate you taking out time to do this with us, and I'm sure that it's gonna help and someone is gonna get inspired out there listening to your podcast sitting in small town or villages or city. So thank you so much, and yeah, have a great evening ahead.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle.